look at other crucial issues facing you and your family in our one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church.
Catholic Connection, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My guest in the second half of the show is a very interesting man. His name is Peter Mongeau. Peter is from Boston. He's also worked in New York in financial services. And evidently made enough money to make an investment in something he really loved. In fact, I love, and I know many of our listeners love, and that is Catholic fiction. He has a passion for it. All of his adult life, maybe earlier, we'll ask him. He has been looking for great Catholic books that tell stories, that have great narratives, that educate, inspire, and perhaps even, you know, wrap our hands a little bit. So he decided, after not finding enough contemporary books of Catholic fiction, realizing that the contemporary publishing industry was not very interested, if at all, in Catholic fiction, he decided to step forward and create Tuscany Press, which is, by the way, a delightful name for a Catholic press. And so Tuscany Press was launched in June of 2012. He also created a Tuscany Prize for Catholic fiction, which gives $5,000 to the winner and some money to the second, third, I think even fourth places. That prize was given in 2013. We're going to talk about the winner. Prize will be given again in 2014. He was educated at Boston College. He's married. He married over 24 years, four children. He's not only active at his parish, but he also coaches children's sports team. What sport, Peter?
Well, right now I'm coaching my daughter's softball team.
Oh, I'd love to do that. If my daughter had been good enough to play, you know, I was dying to coach softball or hardball. But, you know, my daughter didn't care for it, and my son was adopted from Romania. I mean, baseball just wasn't part of his gene set. So welcome to the show, and I want to congratulate you. Again, I'm talking to Peter Mongeau, the publisher of Tuscany Press, the founder and publisher, for actually doing something about what many people talk about and complain about, wring their hands about, that is the lack of awareness of the good Catholic fiction of the past, plus, and even more importantly, the seeming lack of Catholic fiction in the present. Peter, you and I spoke on the phone a few days ago, and we both mentioned to each other the recent article by Dana Gioia, who is certainly one of the most eminent men of Catholic letters in the country, who wrote an article where he said that he didn't say that Catholic fiction was dead. He just said that Catholic fiction was not recognized as such, and he named a few major writers, such as Ron Hanson, who were recognized as very good writers but not recognized as Catholic writers. And secondly, that what Catholic writing there is not promoted by other Catholics, either individuals in the literary industry or academic or just readers. And so it's very hard for a Catholic writer to become visible as a Catholic writer when nobody is providing any help, support, or visibility. Now, it seems to me that you are doing something about that. And tell our listeners a little bit about, was there a specific moment when you said, I got to do this, this has got to happen, or was it just a kind of a cumulative buildup?
Well, I think it's more of a cumulative buildup, and then all of a sudden you make a decision. And you, so over the years, part of one of my other activities is I was involved or coordinated a local parish book club, and, you know, we would do nonfiction, of course, and then we were looking for some good fiction. So we did the travels through the historically, good fiction writers of, Graham Greene, Flannery O'Connor, and Walker Percy. But then there's this what seemed to be a good gap of 20 or 30 years, depending on who you liked and who you chose to read, that was not as well known, or we couldn't find books that would have this appeal. So I had this opportunity to start this company. I'm a bit of a, I like to start things, entrepreneurial.
Good for
and
you.
I decided, well, let's start this Catholic publishing company, and we're going to do Catholic fiction. And it's really, it's fiction with a Catholic perspective, and something that people can relate to. That Catholic perspective, I think, is missing in fiction today. And everybody needs a good story, and they want to read a good story, and they want to be able to connect to the points of view that are in the story and the characters. It doesn't mean the stories are, they are full of flawed people and horrible things may happen, and but they are people who have a Catholic perspective, and eventually, hopefully by the end of the novel, you know, you have enjoyed the story and the characters have come through the story as you would hope them to.
Well, I think your statement on your website, by the way, everyone, I'm talking to Peter Mongeau, the founder and publisher of Tuscany Press. Your statement, which you call What is Catholic Fiction, on the website is excellent. I think that it avoids a lot of the misunderstandings that plague Catholic art in general, that, you know, Catholic art always has to be absolutely clearly about someone getting saved or somebody being forgiven, or it has to all be positive, that it all always has to have very simple and easily recognized symbols of Catholicism. I mean, your explanation of Catholic fiction is very sensitive to the literary side and the need for literary excellence in writing. In other words, fiction is fiction, whether it's Catholic or not, and therefore it has to fit, as it were, the standards of fiction in general. But
right.
Secondly, I think you make a very good point about what distinguishes Catholic fiction from non-Catholic. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, the we could start at the beginning and kind of give you the answer right away.
Sure.
But really, it has to end on Christian hope. And a satisfactory ending. But it's not a simple ending. There are possibilities of hope. So we as Catholics know that when we die, we end up in that great hope of going to heaven and God. But in fiction, you know, we want a really good story. We have flawed characters who may not do what we always want them to do or do what we think they should be doing. But it makes it a more interesting story. There are mysteries that happen. The presence of certain activities may occur there that are the real activities that occur in life in general. However, they may be more, you know, accented to, you know, create an interest in the story. But there's a theme in there. One of the books we have is, you know, about several characters, and one of them is about the...
Which book are you talking about, Peter?
So this would be The Wild Spirits. So
it's a novel?
Wild Spirits, the novel, is coming out in the next month or so.
We can see Wild Spirits. Who's the author of that?
The author is Peter Akute. There's an interesting story about this. This manuscript came to me some time ago from Nigeria. Peter's a Catholic in Nigeria, in the southern part of Nigeria.
Lots of Catholics in Nigeria.
Yes, lots of Catholics. You know, one of the great things, and I'll tell you a couple other stories later, but is to find out who the authors are when you do end up picking a manuscript. What we do is we don't look at who the author is, we just look at the story. Because we, in the end, the story has to sell.
Right.
And it has to be well written. We have to have a good theme in there, or a perspective that's always being tested through events within the novel. But Wild Spirits takes place in Africa, a country that's not named, and it happens during Civil War. And it's really about how people are tested during war. And really about the people who are the victims of war, the people who are conducting the war, and the church of the people who are a priest and a nun and an older priest. They're tested about the really the horrible things that happen in war. So Peter's novel came into us. He's a very interesting man. He's a poet in Nigeria. He takes a bus 45 minutes from his village into town to get to an internet cafe and sends me the updates on his novel.
Right.
so, but Wild Spirits is about the testing of the priests, the testing of the lay people, what I would call, not lay people, we don't refer to them in those terms, but the characters in there about what are they going to do? Something awful happened. How do you react to those situations?
Well, and that sounds to me like the setup of a lot of really well-known and honored Catholic novels, so it sounds to me very encouraging, and obviously it had the literary quality that you were looking for in the first place, so that sounds like an exciting book. And how many books do you already have published at Tuscany Press?
So we have 5 books published. We started a little while ago. We have 6 books in process, which we will get out before Christmas.
Wow, that's
and,
great.
And then we spoke about the Tuscany Prize. And the Tuscany Prize ends on June 30th. I want to mention that those who have manuscripts for short stories.
Yeah, we want to, by the way, I'm going to ask you to give more specific information about how people can do that a little later in the show.
Sure. So when we look at fiction, when we get a manuscript in, we want to see what are the grand themes in the novel and how are they being tested? And does the protagonist grow and go through trials? And are we on our, I wouldn't say edge of our seat, but we really want to try to get on the reader onto the edge of the seat where they, all right, what's going to happen next? And is it beautifully written? Peter Coutet's Wild Spirits, he portrays Africa beautifully, and he brings us into a world that most of us in the United States have not been to. And he sees how what the church is doing in that place of Africa where there's so much... so many trials could have gone on and still go on to this day.
That's great. Now, the Tuscany Prize is awarded at what time of the year is that announced?
So we accept manuscripts through to June 30th.
Well, that's coming up right on us. People are going to have to, once they hear this show, they're pretty much going to have to put their submissions in the mail. Is this something that they can do digitally? Can they submit
digitally? Yes, this is all online. You go to TuscanyPress.com.
Right.
You submit it online. It's very easy to do. It should only take a few minutes. And we have submissions that go all the way up to the last day. In fact, on the last day, we're probably the most active. All the writers are trying to get.
Yeah, well, that's writers for you.
And they're trying to polish it up. So what we'll do is we'll, depending on how we get, we'll be depending on how we announce. But what we try to do is announce as quickly as possible, and by the end of the summer, we have the novel announced, the YA announced, the 10 short stories announced.
I'm talking with Peter Mongeau, publisher and founder of Tuscany Press, about his exciting new work in getting good Catholic fiction back into the bookstores and, I presume, onto people's mobile devices and maybe even audiobooks down the road. But... Peter, it sounds to me like in your first year you had a lot of response from writers.
Yes, we had hundreds of submissions that came in, and we had a very good first year and second year. This will be a second year, and this will be our third contest. So the Tuscany Prize now will run every year till June 30th, and we open up on January 1st, and we end it on June 30th. From there, we choose the best novel, YA novel, and short stories.
So you actually give 2 prizes, is that correct?
Well, we give 3 prizes. We give a novel, we give a YA novel.
Well, I guess YA was what I was not, I mean young adult, right?
Right, young adult. I apologize.
You can't talk in abbreviations to everybody. Okay, so you have 3 prizes. The novel, young adult, and short stories. No poetry, though.
No poetry. We're trying to figure that angle out. But not
that's tough. That's a tough one, and I don't blame you for sort of hesitating, but the guy to go to for advice on that is none other than the person we mentioned earlier, Dana Gioia, who is a nationally, if not internationally, recognized American poet and a Catholic.
Yes.
Peter, how has the response been from readers? Are you selling books? Are you encouraged by that response as well?
Well, we're very encouraged, but we're starting off, so we're trying to get better known. One of our titles that we published, called The Canaan Mystery, has been downloaded over 65,000 times on Amazon.
Can't beat that. Is that through Amazon, or how's it through?
That's through Amazon Kindle.
Yeah.
Downloaded, and people can download it on their Amazon Kindle, or they can download it through their Apple iPad or phones. There's a Kindle app for that.
So you and there. How are your actual printed books doing?
Printed books, we like to get more sold, to tell you the truth, but we're getting in there. We're getting in the door. We have the larger bookstores are starting to carry them. And as we move forward and get more recognition, I think we'll get we'll nudge our way as the camel's nose into the bookstores.
Yeah. Peter, I did an interview on this show a few weeks ago with Mark Brumley, who's, as you know, the publisher of Ignatius Press and has worked with Ignatius Press since nearly the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed the history of Ignatius and how it really took a major bestseller, surprise bestseller, which in his case was then Cardinal Ratzinger's report, called the Ratzinger Report, which really put Ignatius Press on the map and got them into the then big bookstores like Borders and Barnes and Noble and so forth. And I'm sure that's what's going to happen to you. It sounds like it's already happening on the download side anyway.
Yes, we made some great progress, but I think he's absolutely right. We'll need a New York Times bestseller to really open up our, and that's our goal over the next year, trying to get one or two of these onto the New York Times bestseller list.
I noticed that in the Tuscany Prize for Short Stories, I think you have 8 stories there,
mm-hmm.
one called What World Is This and Other Stories, it seems to me that you have a former National Book Award winner included in one of your, as the author of one of those stories.
Yes, Gloria Whalen. She won the National Book Award, I believe it's now 12 years ago.
That's a very big deal to our listeners who don't know that.
It is one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
It is the U.S. prize for a great novel.
It's the equivalent of the English Booker Prize.
That's correct, and she is very well regarded. She is older now. She's close to 90. But
it's okay to be older.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the greatest writers wrote into their late 80s and 90s.
Right.
I mean, nobody's looking at your face when they're reading their book, right?
No. Thank goodness.
Yes.
I want them to look at my face.
Right, exactly.
So she won the first place prize. It's What World Is This? And it's there are 8 short stories in the collection. It can be found through our website, Amazon, and on Kindle. And she, the great surprise I have giving out the Tuscany Prize for Short Stories is to call people up and find out who they are. Because when we look at short stories, we take the names off. We just want the story.
Right. Well, it's kind of like auditioning a new first violin for an orchestra.
They put
them behind a screen so nobody can see who they are.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I called up Gloria and I sent her an email and I said to her, so do you have any published novels? And she goes, I have 50. And I almost dropped the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, who are they published by? And then she starts naming off the famous New York publishers. And she goes, oh, and I did win the National Book Award. So
humble lady.
She's humble. She's very humble and is a terrific writer and lives out there in Michigan. She writes.
That's wonderful. Have you discovered... I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm sure you're discovering some younger writers, maybe in their 20s or 30s, that you're excited about. How old is this young man from Nigeria?
He is over 50 years old. About.
He's a young man, then.
Young man. But in the short story collection, one of our authors, several of them, one of them is a seminarian over in Philadelphia. He wrote an interesting short story.
He's at St. Charles Borromeo?
Yes, he is. Yes, he
Wonderful.
Is. We have a nurse who was studied English at Penn State. She's also a Philadelphia person, and she has decided to write again. And she won.
Well, by the way, let me just say there is proof positive of the importance of what you're doing. You open a door. Somebody wanted to write. They probably had hesitated because, you know, where are they going to get published? Who's the audience? And all of a sudden, Tuscany Press comes on the scene, and the door opens.
Well, it's been so much fun. It has been.
Well, it's been a lot of reading, too, right?
Oh, yes, yes. I used to read novels, but now I read the novels during the day, and I read a collection of short stories at night just to relax before I go to bed.
Right. And the do you find that in what you're reading that there is a sense of the traditions, you know, going back to the greats of, say, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and Graham Greene, George Bernanos, and so forth, and then Flannery O'Connor and Walker Percy later on. Do you find that there's a sense of tradition in what you're reading?
Well, it would depend on the manuscript. One of the things we're trying to do is get a sense of fiction from a Catholic perspective today, a contemporary experience. So, for example, we like to place, especially on the short stories, we like to place these short stories in the contemporary world. We want to show people stories about Catholics today, or, you know, fiction stories about Catholics today and what the issues they would have to deal with. Nigeria is pretty contemporary. We have some historical fiction.
Well, the thing is, as I look at the book list of what's selling, you know, you talked about New York Times best-selling list, seems to me a historical fiction is a very hot property right now. And, of course, as a Catholic, I mean, the possibilities of historical fiction are endless.
Yes, we have this great book that should be coming out later in the summer. It's about an escaped Roman slave. And it's all about his life story, but it's exactly at the time of Jesus and all the controversies that are going on at that time.
Yeah, well, think of the great Polish writer Vinkiewicz's famous novel, Quo Vadis, which was historical fiction. Think of Lew Wallace, who's a Civil War general, his Ben-Hur.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the, not necessarily best known, but some of the best selling, because Quo Vadis and Ben-Hur would certainly fall in that category, have been set in the historical past of the Catholic Church. I mean, I understand your statement wanting to make sure that the contemporary world, this postmodern crazy world we live in, is effectively portrayed. But for the sake of taking advantage of that, you know, desire people have to revisit the past imaginatively, especially in a Catholic context, I'm glad to hear you're including historical fiction as well. If anything, have you seen much that's experimental?
No, not really. But we look at the craft. And experimental could mean anything, to tell you the truth. But we're looking at it. Is the story constructed or crafted the way we would recognize a novel today? And I think what is new to people and what is that there is this great Catholic imagination which has been shut out of the literature world, I think, or neglected.
It's been neglected, yes, absolutely.
I don't want to say shut out, but neglected. And that great Catholic imagination is alive in stories that either historical fiction or contemporary fiction, and that Catholic imagination is so rich, and you get the symbolism that goes into these novels, and they become not literary in the sense of literary boring, but literary in the sense of there's a sense of depth to the stories.
And you talk about the necessity of meaning.
A necessity of meaning.
And necessity of capturing the imagination of the reader.
Right, because as Catholics, and you know this from your knowledge of Flannery O'Connor, as Catholics, we live in a world of God and temporal. We live in the world of God and the world in our lives.
Yes, the supernatural and the natural colliding.
Right, our world is greater than most people's world. Most people, if you look at in the secular world, they just think of today.
To the temporal world is it.
Yes. We live in a world where we have a foot in one side and on the other. And that brings this rich imagination. Plus, Catholicism is rich with symbols. And the knowledge, whether we use these symbols through the biblical stories or just plain symbols in our liturgy, but we can see this happening in these stories that I receive. The Catholic imagination is rich and alive.
That well, you have the. I mean, our worship is liturgical. Our worship is not done in, you know, sort of in a Amish or Quaker context. And I'm not knocking it,
right?
But it's done in the context of stained glass windows, of images, of painting, of statuary, of music, of great architecture. So it fires the imagination.
Oh, it does inspire the imagination. We get some great stories that come in. It's the stories of light and darkness, both in the spiritual and the physical world. It's a sacramental imagination that we can see that the greatest sacrifice some of these characters might make is to give up something for someone else.
Peter, in the few minutes we have left, tell us the one or two Catholic novels that have hit you the hardest in your lifetime of reading.
Hit me the hardest. I think, well, one of the great novels that I always go back to is that it's not a novel, though. It's really Flannery O'Connor's short stories, and how she really does shock you and hit you.
But which one or which two?
Well, Displaced Persons is probably...
Yeah, that's a great one.
And I would have to say, if I would tell any writer, read her book, and this is the one, Mystery and Manners.
Yeah, that's a collection of essays and lectures and book reviews and various things that she did over her entire lifetime.
And it explained the role of a Catholic writer in today's world.
I agree with you completely.
If you're a Catholic writer, you want to be a Catholic writer, Mystery and Manners.
It is Mystery and Manners. And a few other things by Flannery, which we'll talk about when we come back. On the other side of this message, please stay with me and Peter Mongeau, the publisher and the founder of Tuscany Press.
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. Planned Parenthood of Indianapolis has been caught lying about firing one of their staff members, shown to be willing to teach teens about lewd, violent, and abusive sexual behavior in an undercover sting. Live Action was suspicious about the firing because the Planned Parenthood in question continued to offer literature supporting the very thing for which this staff member was supposedly fired. Pro-life groups and Senator Ted Cruz staged a rally outside the White House Thursday on behalf of Miriam Ibrahim. She is the new mother who is facing outrageous torture in the Sudan for being a Christian and marrying a Christian man. If her appeal is dismissed in Sharia court, she is to be brutally flogged. This is Life News Radio. Slavery was wrong for something more than some notion that we don't like slavery anymore. It was wrong because property rights, which slave owners tried to claim, could not compare with the rights lost by those persons called slaves. Legalized abortion holds a similar rights conflict. Be courageous. Know the life issue. Understand the inherent conflicts in abortion. This is Life News Radio. In other headlines, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal signed pro-life bills that could close three of the state's five abortion clinics. In his tenure as governor, he has turned Louisiana to be one of the most pro-life states in the nation. Suffering from Parkinson's disease, famous radio announcer Casey Kasem may die a brutal starvation and dehydration death under a Los Angeles court order. And Washington State is facing the unintended consequences of assisted suicide in a report showing autonomy and not pain as the primary motivator in the request for death. For pro-life headlines delivered to your email address daily, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio.
I'm back with Peter Mongeau, founder and publisher of Tuscany Press. We're talking about his love and passion for Catholic fiction, his concern that about Catholic fiction being unappreciated and not being really published much led to the creation in June 2012 of the Tuscany Press, but also of the Tuscany Prize, which is now in its third year. Is that correct, Peter?
That's correct. Yeah.
2014, and if you're hearing the show, you need to get your entry into Tuscany Press by June 30th, and you can go on the website at TuscanyPress.com and do it right away. Do I have that right, Peter?
That, you do. You have that absolutely correct. We'll keep accepting them through June 30th. So send in your manuscripts. The prize is for unpublished work. So any writer out there who has a manuscript in their drawer, please send it in. I can give you a quick story about one of the books we
Please
did.
Do.
The Book of Jotham. It's a small little novella. But it sat in one of my writer's drawer for 25 years. It sat in it, and one night he just scanned it into a document, sent it in, and I read it one evening, and it was just fantastic, and I knew we were going to have to publish it. So if you have something, and it's about a mentally handicapped person who becomes a disciple of Christ. And it's just a little novella. It's a short little piece, but it was definitely worth publishing.
Well, I'll tell you, you must have made some authors very happy. I mean, if you're publishing things that they effectively have given up on for 25 years, they must be thrilled. You must be their best friend.
I have a lot of author friends, that's for sure. They're all coming to me with their manuscripts and asking me for advice, and I try to be as helpful as I can to as many people as possible. One of the things, Deal, that I realized that now, which I didn't realize when I started, is I was going to have to provide people information and resources that they can writers could use to help them really to explore their vocation as a writer and become better at it.
I noticed that on your website. There's a whole section on your Tuscany Press website that really is devoted to supplying advice and guidance and tools. Tell our listeners a little about that.
Sure. There's a tab on my website called Writer Resources.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath that tab, there's much information, I should say. There's my publisher message, but there is What is Catholic Fiction? So any of the listeners out there can read What is Catholic Fiction? But I think the most helpful piece I have on there is I created a site, a tab on required reading if you want to get published. And under that required reading, I listed all the resources I thought that every writer should know about in order for them to be successfully published, whether it's at Tuscany Press or Random House. It didn't matter. When we started putting this together, we said we need to help people. We need to teach them.
There's a lot of naivete out there about publishing.
Right, right. And writing is hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. It's not just writing at your keyboard. It's a lot more to it than that. But on the Writer Resources, we give John Paul's letter to the artists, one of the most underappreciated letter, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was an artist himself.
Right.
And he inhabited the world of the arts as a young man.
And he called us as Catholics to animate the world of culture with mm-hmm. our faith. And that's one of the great messages. And
that's why we call this program Church and Culture, Peter.
Yeah.
That's why we do that.
Animate it with beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And these stories, while they may be rough in the edges of some of the events, but they are beautiful in the end. And
Stop. Rough in what way?
Rough in the sense that these aren't clean stories.
Well, life isn't clean, Peter.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, this is so important that you tell people, explain to them that our fiction, Catholic fiction, can't avoid the messiness of human life.
That's right.
And that's which is called sin or whatever you want to call it. In other words, if you don't portray human life as it is, not telling the human story. You're not telling the Catholic story either.
And you're not telling the truth.
Right.
You know, we want to be the truth. The truth is life out there, there's sin, there's evil, bad things happen to good people, really good people that we can...
And bad things happen to bad people.
Bad things happen to bad people. And
what's hard to take is when good things happen to bad people.
That's true. But most of those good things happen to bad people, are temporal, only temporal.
Correct.
You know,
well, I think by definition.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's ephemeral.
Well, you know, let's give an example. I run into this not just with fiction, but with film,
mm-hmm.
and especially painting, anything that's a visual medium.
I'll give you a couple examples.
Go ahead.
Spirits. In Wild Spirits, there is people who get killed, and it's described. There's rape.
There's a rape. Well, there's a rape. There's a male rape at the end of Flannery O'Connor's The Violent Barred Away.
Right. So it's not gratuitous, and I always tell my writers, and I say, we can portray it without getting into the gratuitous details.
Of course not. And in fact, in Flannery, it's clear it happened, mm-hmm. but it's made clear not by describing it at all.
Correct.
But you know it happened.
Right.
This, by the way, goes back to Aristotle's Poetics. Aristotle made a very useful distinction in his Poetics, which was the first sort of basic guide to what good art is, especially good literary art, where he said, plot can have spectacle in it, but if the plot is dominated or overweighed by the spectacle, then you have a fundamental mistake. And this is what people who, you know, write gratuitous sex scenes and so forth, the mistake they're making.
Right, and it just becomes meaningless. Spectacle is meaningless.
Without being embedded in a narrative.
Correct. One of my favorite, not favorite, I would say, is one of the great books on writing is The Art of Fiction by John Gardner.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book.
And he basically argued, and he was very controversial at the time, but he basically argues that same point. If literature has no meaning to it, it doesn't deal with great themes, it doesn't deal with, you know, it's just a spectacle, then it has no meaning and it's not worth anything in the end.
Yeah, I was actually alive and kicking when that book was published, and I recall that it was treated in the reviews as just kind of traditionalist rant.
Right.
Because he was trying to say, look, avant-garde experimental fiction is fine, but it can't leave the world of meaning behind completely. And especially you can't leave the world of meaning. You know, human experience is common. It may be in different languages, and it may be expressed in different concepts, but the experience itself is common, and if that's where fiction has to be. If it's not there, then it's not going to speak to anybody.
Right, and Gardner goes on, and this is who one of the revelatory books I've read since I started the publishing company, is that Gardner goes on and said, in the end, it has to be rooted in love. So it's important to know that all these things go on, but they have to have some sort of meaning. And all these events within the narrative, but in the end, it has to have meaning. It's not to write a great novel. You have to provide a good story, a great story to your readers, but it has to have some depth to it.
Well, and it has to be the right kind of depth.
Correct.
But what you're saying is to our listeners and to anyone who will buy a Tuscany Press book is this isn't necessarily going to be a goody-goody feel-good book. Is that correct?
I would say you'll be very satisfied with the book, but it will deal with real life, good and evil, sin and redemption.
I can't tell you how many times, Peter, I've recommended Flannery O'Connor to people, and they come back and say, why would you recommend that? It was violent and all this grotesquery and weird characters. Why would you recommend a book like that?
Well, you know, she is a short story writer, so she's more contained, even though she has two novels, as you know, but most of her shorts are just very contained and gripping, and they just, you know, they are, shall we say, focused. Her novel is multiple plot lines, and it's a braid that goes in and out of certain scenes and settings and characters.
But she deliberately, the title of her last novel, The Violent Bear It Away, which is a quote from the Gospel of Matthew, and she deliberately employs violence as a means of depicting grace.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to avoid the grotesque, the violent, even the sinful, is to avoid the Christian narrative altogether.
Right. And
I mean, not all fiction needs to be, as you put it, YA, young adult, right?
Young adult. There are young adult. Young adults are it's a different category. Not all fiction has to be very grotesque either.
That's true.
But it has to be a great story and grip the reader, and there has to be some stakes involved. And as Catholics, we know the stakes involved, and the high stakes involved are between good and evil, between God and temptation. And we are flawed characters ourselves, but our characters in the books are even more flawed, or I would say maybe more heroic. And we want to be able to connect with our characters and make sure we like some of them and don't like others.
Well, let me mention, just for the sake of illustration, three of my favorite novels and three acknowledged great novels. Madame Bovary by Gustave Flaubert, Anna Karenina by Tolstoy, and Kristen Lovren's Daughter by Sigrid Undset, Catholic writer. All three of them, the central drama is adultery. The entire narrative revolves around the committing of adultery and the consequences of it. So you have three of arguably the best novels ever written, one arguably the great, one of the greatest Catholic novels. And if you eliminate adultery and the writing about it, then you've eliminated the novel.
Right. And I agree. I mean, so our novels, or Tuscany Press, and it really reflects life, what happens in life. Now, maybe places we've never been before, in a war zone, or Africa, or something along those lines of the temptation of certain activities, like adultery or stealing or anything along those lines. But our novels at Tuscany Press take life, whether it's in the historical time period or present, and deal with these issues of good and evil, of choosing good, choosing evil, choosing sin, and then also redemption, hope. These all themes that come into our novels.
Yeah, and you know, one interesting thing, Peter, that you're going to face, if not you haven't already faced, a Catholic, let's say a Catholic, group of Catholic readers who grew up, for lack of a better example, say in Birmingham, Alabama, versus a group that grew up in Detroit, Michigan, versus a group that grew up in Boston or New York, or a group that grew up, say, in Bangor, Maine. They're going to have markedly different understandings of what they mean or we mean by real life, what they're exposed to. For example, in the South, one of the pressing realities is that of race. You know, the
right.
Shadow of segregation and the shadow of lynching and so forth. In New York, it's going to be the Irish experience. In Boston, it's going to be Irish and Italian.
Right.
In Bangor, I guess it's the Moose. I'm not sure what it is up there. But the point is that not every cultural setting will necessarily be immediate to the reader. So you have to have, that's why the variety of fiction is so helpful in reaching out to a whole wide spectrum of Catholic readers.
And I think you're absolutely correct. And the classic example of that is the short story collection. Short story, not that I want to get off the novel, but the novels have to be different. They can be historical fiction, mystery, page-turner, or more literary. And the short story is really the vignette of that Catholic experience. I've had a story about Catholicism in the Midwest, in the farm country, in the city, in South America, or the setting in Philadelphia. So that short story collection really reflects how Catholics navigate the world they live in the settings they are, whether it's Bangor, Maine, or the Midwest, or New York City, or, in fact, you know, in South America. There's one of our stories in South America in our short story collection this year.
I'm talking with Peter Mongeau, the founder and the publisher of Tuscany Press, established June of 2012. They already have approximately 10 books in print, or 8, another 10 coming out before Christmas. He's in his third year of awarding a Tuscany Prize, which actually, in three categories, which actually pays real money. Isn't it? But it is interesting that I would say the last two great Catholic novelists in this country, two of four, came from the South, Flannery O'Connor and Walker Percy. Another of the greats in the generation of Flannery came from Minnesota, the great J.K. Powers, J.F. Powers. And then another one came from the Midwest, who wrote the Staggerford series of Catholic novels. I believe I don't have his name because I am over 60, but I'll remember it. But it's interesting that these are not New York-based. They're not L.A.-based or Boston-based, although there have been great Catholic writers out of Boston. But they're, now the Catholic fiction is coming from everywhere.
And in the world we live in today, it's being international. Nigeria, I have.
Absolutely.
One of my writers is a short story writer. She's writing a novel, but she lives in Milan, Italy.
Is she writing it in English?
She's an American, but she lives in Milan, Italy. So she brings.
I was trying to think of the writer John Hassler, who is has written quite a wonderful collection of novels that deserve to be written. Are you ever going to get into Catholic novels in translation, Peter?
Well, right now we have a couple of books proposed to a Spanish publishing house, so that's in the works. We're trying to get our books translated into Spanish, and that's a very important that we do that, so we reach out to the Spanish world.
What about taking a Spanish novel and translating it into English and publishing it?
That would be good. As a publisher, I wish I knew Spanish, but I don't.
Well, you can always find people who... What I do, Peter, is I read very carefully find reviews of novels published in... English reviews of novels published in other languages.
Oh.
And I especially look at for reviews of novels in translation. Because so often a European novel, especially one from Italy or France, may in fact have a strong Catholic dimension. But unfortunately, again, like you said at the beginning of the interview, you can get a very good English translation of a French novel that is arguably a Catholic novel, but it's published in English in England and the United States, but isn't discussed as a Catholic novel. That dimension of it is completely ignored.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there are some successful Spanish writers who publish in English, as you know, lots of good Spanish writers, but even Catholic Spanish novels, and I believe Ignatius Press is translating a few.
They are. They've done actually quite a bit, but you know the novel that I'm thinking of in terms of its very Catholic message or meaning was published in 1999 by Laurence Cosse, and it was published in English in translation, and it had a blurb from Ralph McInerney, which is what sort of got my eye, the late great writer Ralph McInerney, and Laurence Cosse is a woman in her 60s in France who went on to write another really wonderful novel, again with a very strong Catholic sub-theme, called A Novel Bookstore. And she now has three or four novels in English, but she's not known as a Catholic writer in the United States at all, but she is.
Right. She has Catholic themes, perspective, and That sounds very
right. Right. But this is what I think the point Dana Joy was making in his essay for First Things, in that we do have Catholic writers, but they're not celebrated as such.
Right, and I think there's my experience in the few years is some writers, they are Catholics and they are very successful, but they don't stand up and say, I'm a Catholic writer.
Right.
So like Graham Greene wrote these great four Catholic novels, but he said, don't tell anybody, I'm not a Catholic writer, he said, even though he wrote what I think probably the best Catholic novel, where you and I may disagree on, but he wrote, I think it's four Catholic novels, four or five Catholic novels, you could say that.
The thing that I think about disagreement about Catholic novels, it's just not important. You know, what's important is that all of us are out there promoting the novels that we appreciate. We should spend less time arguing about what the best ones are or even whether a novel is Catholic or not, and just join forces and promote the Catholic novel regardless of disagreements.
I agree. And we have to support each other, and we have to help each other, and that may include advice what I try to do is I try to support as many Catholic writers as I can, not just through publishing, but through the resources I make available. And I think you're absolutely right that we do have to go out and support Catholic writers and buy their books and give them a chance.
I noticed on your website that you have a link to, well, by the way, I signed up for it today, your newsletter.
Well, thank you.
I think you call it Catholic Link. Is that correct?
Catholic Inc.
Yeah, Inc., which is going to contain news, I presume, about publications at Tuscany Press, about the prize and so forth. You also have a section where you're starting to recruit and publish book reviews.
That's correct.
So, and you have a long list of fresh-faced book reviewers there.
That's correct. One of the things I did was I purchased a site called CatholicFiction.net, and it reviews Catholic books, and it has classics and contemporary. We also have a weekly column called The Catholic Imagination in You, which we invite people to submit columns, and we publish them once a week. We also have author interviews on there, Catholic authors. So I'm trying to support the Catholic fiction writers or the Catholic writers in the United States, and actually some of them England and further on. And what we do is we send out a weekly email. We have links to these reviews of all these books. We do a classic book, and we do contemporary.
I notice you also have links to two of the best Catholic literary magazines out there today, and that's Dappled Things and Joseph Pierce's St. Austin Review.
Yes.
So again, I love seeing that spirit of coalition building, as it were, that you obviously possess and are putting there on the page of your website. But you're trying to pull things together, am I right?
I am. And Dappled Things, we work with them a lot, actually. We have interviews from our authors on there, and we also, last year, we gave our top Tuscany Prize short story to them at no cost, and they ran it in one of their editions. So we're trying to get everybody to know about Dappled Things and Tuscany Press. And Joseph Pierce, I'm in contact with him. He loved the Book of Jotham, and he recommended it to everybody as books you must read. So I'm speaking with him. We've also done some other work together.
And the impulse here is, again, to serve the church using the means of beauty, art, and the imagination. Peter Mongeau, I want to thank you for being a guest here on Church and Culture today. Hope you'll come back in the near future to report more on your progress with both the press and the prize. And also, we need to get some of your writers on here and talk to them about their books.
Yes, we will. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter. And for all of you listeners who have been with us, we hope you'll join us this time next week to hear from some very interesting people just like Peter Mongeau. Peter, thank you.
Thank you.
as we close, I want to thank each of you for listening. I hope you found it as enjoyable as I have in bringing it to you. Join me again next week on Church and Culture, brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
If you have any comments or questions about Church and Culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
This program is made possible in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, dedicated to helping grow businesses for a strong community of faith and Christian values. CatholicBusinessPages.com is your online directory resource for connecting you with businesses that have taken a strong stand to support those values that impact our lives. If Christian principles make a difference in your life, then CatholicBusinessPages.com will link you to business professionals who care about the values of our nation. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
The Ave Maria Radio app is available for all Apple and Android users. Listen to Ave Maria Radio live or listen to your favorite shows whenever you want, on demand. Like what you heard? Post a link on your email, Facebook, or Twitter account in just two taps. You can even leave a voice message on our feedback page. Purchase books or look up references from our hosts and guests, and it's all absolutely free. Just go to the App Store and type Ave. It's just that simple. The Ave Maria Radio app.
Are you concerned that homeschooling both a preschooler and an older child might be too much to handle? Well, don't be. Today on Homeschool Heartbeat, host Mike Smith interviews HSLDA Early Years Consultant Vicki Bentley on ways you can give attention to every student in your homeschool.
Vicki, how can parents homeschooling older children balance spending hands-on learning time with their preschooler without neglecting their older students?
Well, Mike, I found it helpful to work with my younger children first and then frequently, whether it was to spend a few minutes in an activity that we'd planned or just to check in and maybe get a snuggle. Most preschoolers need about 15 minutes to get really involved in their imaginative play. They'll often spend another 30 minutes or more playing. This is their work. This is time for you then to work with an older child, while still being close enough to supervise the younger one, of course. And some of the hands-on time can include tagging along with the learning experiences that are going on with you and your older children. Your younger ones can play with Duplos or maybe color while listening to read-alouds. Or they can play word games with you and be included in some of those other activities. My 3-year-old granddaughter learned the basic parts of speech by playing Mad Libs with her older sister. Teach to the level of your older children, but include your little ones as part of the learning team. Put them on your lap. Ask them questions. Your little guy will ride the mental bus to his own mental bus stop. And when he hops off that mental bus, you'll know he's hopped off. And then you've got those developmentally appropriate activities waiting for him again.
Well, thank you for sharing this, Vicki. Until next time, I'm Mike Smith.
Are you embarking on the preschool years? Request your free copy of You Can Homeschool Your Preschooler for insights into ways you can help give your child a great preschool education. Just visit our website, homeschoolheartbeat.com. That's homeschoolheartbeat.com.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Who really likes being held accountable? We talked yesterday that children don't like being disciplined. But in fact, this raises a larger question. Who does? Even the most adult among us don't like being held accountable. When was the last time you were stopped by a state trooper and he said, "Excuse me, I clocked you at 71 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone." And you said, "No, officer, I think you're mistaken. I was doing a good job."